This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you love your phone but not your carrier, just switch to T-Mobile. You can keep your phone, keep your number, and we'll help pay it off up to $800 per line. You can also use our savings calculator to compare our plans and streaming benefits against Verizon and AT&T. So, switch and keep your phone, keep your number, and keep more of your moolah at T-Mobile.com.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported in 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Coming back to you live here from Homegrown in downtown Wichita, right outside Navsker Park, where we were going to set up before we were blown away here this morning. Appreciate Homegrown for welcoming us in and allowing us to have a booth here for 4 hours.
We promised we would order breakfast.
We did.
So we were just taking up a booth.
We did order breakfast.
Yeah. It was delicious, too.
I'll give you, as a tip of the cap and an appreciation of them, I'll give you my Homegrown go-to breakfast. And I tell people this all the time. This is not only because they let us in here. It is my favorite breakfast place I've ever been to. Has been since we moved to Wichita. We used to drive all the way out west, half hour, to sit in line for an hour at their original location to have breakfast. Then they opened out east, and we go there, and then they open this location. We come down here from time to time. Favorite place. Love it. Love it. I get the West Coast wake up as a scramble. I put in the green peppers instead of the onions. They have a salsa verde. I get that on the side. I dump it all over it. They got those breakfast potatoes are incredible. Good English muffin with homemade jelly every single time. Every time. That's my go-to here. That's what I just had.
I mean, it looked really good. I'm a sucker for a good biscuits and gravy.
Yeah.
And their biscuits and gravy is phenomenal. So that's what I got today. Douse it in some Cholula.
It's
all
good.
A little couple over easy eggs, some of the breakfast potatoes, a little bit of gravy mixed in there. It's great. It's sitting like a lump in my stomach right now, but that's a great feeling to have.
I tell people when I eat breakfast here, I don't eat lunch typically. Yeah. Tony, our third man on the scene, had it his first time. He was like, man, I'm full. I'm like, yeah, you will be. We love it. We appreciate them very, very much. Biscuits and gravy are interesting. I never get them at a restaurant, because I'm always afraid they'll not be as good as my mom's growing up. Mm. And so it never registers as a menu item for me. I'm never like, oh, you know what? I'll have biscuits and gravy. But then when I'm home and like, I'm like, I love it.
Yeah.
So I
love them. I mean,
try it.
There's nothing that I love more than a good restaurant biscuits and gravy.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of times, like, you know, you'll do, I like,
no, just it's like sausage gravy, right? There's meat.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I like just a standard breakfast, like give me the eggs,
oh, yeah,
the bacon, give me the hash,
sure,
browns, you know, piece of toast, call it good.
Yep.
But man, like biscuits and gravy, I'll pick that over basically any other breakfast menu item. Freaking,
that's
love
interesting.
It.
I'm not a sweet breakfast item person either.
I love pancakes.
I like a bite of a pancake,
yeah,
usually, but not like a, like I would be disappointed in myself if I had breakfast and pancakes were the only thing that I had.
Yeah.
You know, like I need the meat.
And I know it goes counter to everything about me that my favorite breakfast item is a dish where you pour gravy over the top of a bunch of other things. Like you would think I'd want my biscuits on one side of the plate and the gravy on the other, but those two things go hand in hand. It's my favorite breakfast item.
Yeah, I don't understand. There's nothing better than mixing all the breakfast items together. Let the eggs run all over everything else. Dip the bacon in the egg yolk.
I'm fine with that as long as it's not like getting into my syrup for my pancakes. Like you can't mix the savory and sweet.
I'm
not a fan of that.
Just swirl it up in there. I just said something that I need to ask you about.
Yeah.
So I catch grief a lot from my wife for the way that I say the yellow part of an egg.
Yolk.
How do you say it?
Yolk.
That's what I say.
How is it supposed to be pronounced?
Yolk is yolk. What she says.
I don't. What's the difference between the way you just said it?
Yolk and yolk. The L.
Oh, with the L?
The L.
Yolk.
The L is a part of the word.
An egg yolk. Egg yolk. I don't know. I don't think I have a hard and fast rule. I think it just kind of depends upon how it comes out.
I don't know that there is a word I catch more heat for.
Really?
Than that word when I say it. Huh. I mean, she acts like I'm the biggest idiot walking the face of the planet when I use the L in that word. And my go-to is always this. What was the name of our president that rhymes with
Polk?
Exactly.
Polk with an L.
Yes.
Are you sure that's the reason she thinks you're an idiot?
There's
probably
reasons.
Multiple reasons.
There are, but I'm telling you, that's a big one.
Okay.
And it has to be said every time I say the word. Okay. Like, you've already tried to make this point. Like, it's the way that I say the word. You're just going to have to live with
it. Deal with it.
Yeah.
You've been married for how many years? 10, 12
years,
whatever.
10
like
years.
At this point, you're 10 years in. You're not changing that.
I am not changing that word. Now I overemphasize it, of course. Now it's like
yolk.
Yolk. Did I get a yolk with that? That's
how do you say? Do you say syrup or syrup?
Both, I think.
Okay,
I think I would say both.
It's always been syrup for me.
I think I say syrup more often, but I think I've said syrup or syrup. Like
syrup.
Yeah, probably. I probably don't say that.
I'll say syrup.
Like caramel. She's like caramel or caramel. I say
caramel.
Both.
It's caramel.
I do say both.
Yeah.
I don't know which one. It's kind of like coyote and coyote. I say both. I don't know which one I say more often.
I mean, you're from the panhandle, so it's probably coyote.
Yes.
I think.
That's where it comes in. But then, Wile E. Coyote.
True. You're also from the panhandle, so I wouldn't be surprised if you pronounce it Warsh instead of Wash.
I don't. My dad does. Warsh. My dad does. I do not. My dad also says guitar instead of guitar, which I think is the greatest of the words.
That's great. Is it crayon or crown?
Oh, do not get me started on this one. So, it's crayon.
It's crayon.
My wife would say crayon. Now,
she's giving you a hard time about yolk.
Here's what I'll say about crayon, because I've given people crayon is very much a West Coast thing.
Right.
And crayon is at least an acceptable abbreviation because you're just removing some letters and you could still get to crayon. You can't, there is no way to get to crown.
Crown.
That's the one that bothers me. No offense, because I know there are a lot of people that might say it. I'm just telling you, when I hear crown, I'm like,
I mean, it's absolutely crayon.
I agree.
It's 100% crayon.
It's crayon. Crayon is the correct answer. 100%. I do know now, though, that crayon is regional, and I do at least you can just remove some middle letters, shrink it down, and it's almost like an abbreviation.
I don't buy it. She can't call it crayon and get mad at you for pronouncing it yolk.
No.
Like, that's a double standard. She can't have it both ways.
I'll fight more battles about the long or the short A in Nevada and pajama and because she, like, it's Nevada. It's Nevada. And I'm like, no, it's Nevada. It's Nevada. No, not around here. It's not. That might fly out in San Diego where you're from. Say it.
Absolutely Nevada.
Saying it the right way.
Nevada.
But around here, we don't say
but
Nevada.
But it's funny because I say Nevada, but then I also say pajama. So I'm not pajama. Consistent in either one of them.
Pajama.
When you're from Kansas, you get just it all from every direction because we're right smack dab in the middle.
Are you soda, pop, or Coke?
The older I've gotten, I've actually gotten more soda, but I grew up pop.
Everything's a Coke.
Yeah, see, nothing's a Coke.
I will probably say soda more often now, but growing up, everything's a Coke. Can I get a Coke? What kind?
Yeah. I grew up, it was always, can I get a pop? And now I kind of feel like the older I get, the more mature I am and the more,
Yeah, I don't feel
I feel like I have to say, I would like a soda, please.
No, I don't feel that way at all, but I do say soda more, but it's Coke. What kind? And the reason is because you ask for a Coke, you get a Coke. So now you've learned like nope.
Because they're not going to qualify it by saying what kind. They're
back home, you say, can I get a Coke? They'll say what kind of Coke you want.
Yeah.
And you'll say a Sprite.
Right. that's not the way it works.
Yeah, it's not. So you better say it right there.
So for all the folks coming up from Houston and Lubbock this weekend, if you don't want a Coke,
say
order
soda.
A soda.
That's right. And I don't know if it stretches Lubbock for sure. It would be that way. I don't know about Houston. That's a different planet down there.
True.
But in Lubbock would be more of more of my neck of the woods. We're just 90 minutes from Lubbock down the road, up the road in Amarillo. All right. We've got Matt Hamilton coming in. He's going to talk a little wind surge baseball. That's later this hour. I need some help with bets. So here's what I want everybody to do. look at your first window of games and tell me who you like. Because I like to break it up into sessions so that I can win some money in the first session and then carry it over to the second. I need a hit.
How'd you do yesterday? Did you win anything yesterday?
No, not good. Nothing. Nothing hit. I need a three-team parlay out of the first window. We're going to walk through that and look at some betting here on the games today. Don't go away. Sports Daily, coming right back.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here. Coming to you a couple more hours live as we are not braving the wind and the weather any longer. It was really cold yesterday and then really sunny. I have a nice sunburn, so I'm wearing a hat today. And then now it's really windy. Apologies for my voice. The allergies and all of the hits yesterday have taken their toll. So I think it
probably, you sound fine. Yeah. I think you're okay.
Yeah, we'll be all right. Yeah. We'll be all right. We're having fun. Matt Hamilton will come in, talk a little Windsor. So let's talk bets. How's your bracket, Charlie?
Bracket's really good.
Yeah?
It's really good. In fact, in our KFH Sports Daily Bracket Challenge, I'm in first place.
Oh, good for you.
I got 14 out of 16 right. I missed the Clemson game yesterday.
That's cute.
And I missed the KU game yesterday. That's it.
Anybody, you had KU to the Sweet 16.
I did.
Did you have Clemson to the Sweet
16? I did not. No, I had Clemson losing in the second round.
So I'm down three Sweet 16 teams. I had KU, Clemson, and then I had San Diego, or UC San Diego, who, despite a really bad start, almost got it done last night. So I'm down, but nobody in the Elite Eight, so it's fine.
And I'm not going to talk any trash or anything. I mean, you know my reputation as like jinxing things,
trying to coax you into it.
So I'm not gonna jinx anything at all. I mean, I'm hopeful it's going to be a good day, but I'm not banking on anything.
So, you know, I need help with bets here. I got to get a first window bet in. I like to do them in, you know, by like broadcast windows, so it's like the day's split in half. This one's tough when I'm looking at them. I think as I look at the games, there are a few that are really tight lines that I just sort of have a winner in. And so I think my options here would be New Mexico as an underdog, who I have winning a game. North Carolina as a 1.5-point favorite that I had winning that game. St. Mary's as a 4.5-point favorite that I had winning that game. Memphis as a 1.5-point dog, who I have winning that game. Or Mississippi State, who I have winning -1.5. I think those are my best options because I have those teams winning. Man, I don't know, though. I don't know. Like, North Carolina feels like the right bet, I think, based on the way they played and everything going into it. I know it's against Chris Beard. I know we're not going to agree on Colorado State and Memphis because you like Colorado State in the game.
Yeah. I like Mississippi State laying the 1.5 against Baylor. I mean, really outside of VJ Edgecombe, that's about the only threat that Baylor has right now.
Yeah. It's a Jans bet.
And I mean, Chris Jans is phenomenal, and Mississippi State's been really good this year. So I'm going to lay the 1.5 with Mississippi State. I'm going to lay the 1.5 with Colorado State. I like Nico Medved. I like Nate Collins. I think they're going to move on.
I'm going to stay away from that game because, I originally wrote Colorado State, then scratch it out and wrote Memphis. So I'm gonna stay clear of that. So I'm gonna go Mississippi State. I'm gonna go North Carolina, and I'm gonna go New Mexico.
Are you laying any of the big points, like with the one seeds, like the Duke? I mean, John Shire said this morning that Cooper Flagg will have no restrictions, and he's a full go.
No chance. I'd be more likely to take the point. No way.
Houston. I mean,
I know
we were concerned about that.
Did they end up covering?
They did by a large margin yesterday against SIUE.
But did they cover? It was 28 and a half.
Yeah, they won by 35 or something like that.
Yeah. No, I will not be taking those. That was I just put it in.
Okay.
That's what I'm going with in the first window. Now I need to win that because I think that was the rest of my money in my little account here. North Carolina minus 1.5, New Mexico plus 3.5, Mississippi State minus 1.5. That is my early session play for the day.
If you want to talk about a couple underdog covers that might play out today that might cash, I'm looking at potentially Robert Morris in the Alabama game. It's plus 21.5 on DraftKings.
Alabama can score like
Alabama
crazy.
Alabama can score, but I'm not sure that they'll be able to do that, to win by 21.5 against a Robert Morris team. I think that Robert Morris can keep it in the teens at least. So I like that. And then the other one, I actually like this one better, is Grand Canyon in Maryland. Grand Canyon's the 13, and it's 10.5. I think Grand Canyon can keep it in single digits.
So I haven't looked at the evening window yet, and that's where that game comes from. That is the last game. Yeah. I missed that one. I should have taken that one. All right. So then we go to the second session of games. I took New Mexico.
New Mexico's in the second session.
Well, there goes that. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll be waited on. I'll be anxiously awaiting that.
But I don't disagree with you on New Mexico. In fact, I like them on the money line. I've got them beating Marquette.
I went ahead and took them, but I have them winning in the tournament. All right. Arizona minus 14.5. I don't hate that. That's not bad.
I'm okay with that.
That's not bad. Even though Akron was catching some love in the selection show.
It'll have to be a Caleb Love game.
I like Illinois minus 3.5. I think Illinois is getting a little underrated here. Oregon minus 6.5. I know people like Liberty. That's the late game tonight. I'd probably go to the Oregon side of that. So, you know, I don't love the bets today. I didn't love the bets yesterday either. There are a lot of tournament years where I feel really good about first round games. Not this year.
Let me give you one that you didn't mention in the second window tonight that I think could cash. UConn laying 5.5 against Oklahoma. It's an 8-9 matchup, but I think that there's a pretty good disparity between UConn and Oklahoma, even though they're only one seed apart.
I agree. Sort of like Georgia Gonzaga. I'm not sure that I think UConn's as good as Gonzaga. Now, you know what? You made me wonder how the SEC did yesterday. Let's look.
I don't think they did well. I mean, I know Tennessee won, A&M won.
Auburn won.
Yep.
Georgia. So they lost Georgia yesterday. I mean, Arkansas obviously did well. They lost Mizzou yesterday. And that's it. So they lost two yesterday.
They lost Texas in the first four. So they're that's four. True. They're so four and three. Three.
Good call.
They're 4-3 yeah.
So 4-3. Yeah. That's not amazing. It's not terrible, but it's not amazing. And then today they're going to have their other seven teams go, and we don't like Oklahoma.
Yep.
So there's potentially one.
I do like Mississippi State. I do too. I like them.
I like, but it's a coin flip. It's a coin flip. Vanderbilt. I like St. Mary's. In fact, that should have been my other early window bet. Minus 4.5. St. Mary's is slightly favored. I think Ole Miss is going to go down today. I don't think Kentucky's losing to Troy, even though some people like Troy. Florida's not losing. And there's one more.
Mentioned OU.
Oh, and then Oklahoma. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Oklahoma's. I think Oklahoma's going.
Yeah.
So we could
What's
get
a good showing for the SEC? I mean, what do you feel like
above,
after going
above 500?
I mean,
above 500.
It's got to be better than that, right? Like, this is the best conference in America. This is always, by the way, the narrative about the Big 12. The Big 12 usually gets a lot of teams in. They didn't this year. But it's always like, the Big 12's amazing. And then, like, they don't do well in the tournament.
And it's not like truly representative either, by the way, because you might have a great Big 12 team against just a good or average SEC team that made it in. Well, that's not a fair way to look at it. Like, if you really want to get a strength of a conference to me, like, you have all the top teams play and you just kind of go down the list, right? You have the two best teams in the league play, and then you have the next two best teams in the league play, and then you go all the way down and Oklahoma State plays I don't know who is the worst team in the SEC. It's South Carolina.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, wasn't Jay Billis. Maybe it was Jay Billis. No, it was somebody else. It was on Eisen after us 2 days ago. said they thought South Carolina was the best last place team in a league they have ever seen. And that was what they used to talk about the strength of the SEC, is that they thought South Carolina was the best worst team in a conference. So like any conference ever in the history of anything, he thought South Carolina was the best last place team he'd ever seen. And it's not because he thought South Carolina like underperformed or were better
right.
than the other teams. You're just saying like even that far down, that was still a good team. And I'll buy that. I will buy that.
Who were the SEC teams that didn't make the tournament? I mean, I know South Carolina.
There were only two.
Right.
South Carolina.
Who was the other one?
It's going to take me a minute to find that. There's the Big 12. How do I switch leagues? Oh, right here. Okay. So the two teams that did not make it were South Carolina and LSU.
LSU. Okay.
And we saw LSU play Kansas State. They were not bad.
Yeah.
They were not bad. So I'll buy it. I'll buy that the SEC was that good. I think that they earned it. And I'll buy it because while I think we get this thing that complicates things and hurts us in football, I don't think we get it in basketball. And in the Big 12, we have seen it. And there have been years where the Big 12 was very clearly the best league in the country, and they didn't find a ton of tournament success. And I don't think that's the barometer that we should use. I think it's fun to look at it. I think it'll be fascinating if the SEC goes sub 500 in the first round. That might not be good for them, but I don't think it means they weren't the best team in the best league in the country. I think they were the best league in the country.
Right. At bare minimum, you know, they need a duplication of yesterday. They need to go at minimum 4-3 today. Yeah.
And they could, and then they'd be 8-6.
They'd be 8-6. Okay.
They got 8 out of 32. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Look, the other part of it too is, I think when you get like to the Elite Eight, for instance, I do think you can look then and say who has the most Elite Eight teams in. I think that could change it. Like, let's say there's a world where Iowa State, Tech, Houston, BYU. Let's say they've got 4 out of 8 teams in the Elite Eight. I think then you can say, all right, hold your horses, SEC. The Big 12 is just as good.
My bracket, I've got 3 Big 12 teams in the Final Four.
That's
probably overly aggressive.
But if that happened, I think then we can have a conversation of, well, maybe the Big 12 was right there with the SEC this year. The SEC was the deepest league. I don't think there's any question about that.
I mean, I think that clearly the Big 12 this season has been more top-heavy than the SEC, where you've had more distribution of the talent and the more, you know, skill with all the teams from top to bottom in the conference. Like the teams that are at the bottom or that were at the bottom of the Big 12, not great, right? Like Colorado, not great.
Right.
Oklahoma State, not great.
Yep. Kansas State flashed at least for a portion of the season.
And Colorado had a small little stretch where they were challenging, but like overall, not great.
Yeah. Utah, not great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kansas is what let the league down this year, because if Kansas is where we thought Kansas was going to be, now you're boasting a top 5 of Kansas, Houston, Arizona, Texas Tech, and Iowa State. I'll put that top 5 up with anybody.
Well, you know, Kansas State let down too, because I think that the expectation was that they were a tournament team as well, easily, and then you know they underperformed also. I mean, so like there are a handful of disappointments in the league where the SEC doesn't really have any, right? Like. Yeah, South Carolina and LSU didn't make the tournament, but
they had good years. Yeah, they didn't have good league years, but they had good years. And that's so end of the day, no matter what happens, you're not going to convince me that wasn't the league's top team this year.
Yeah.
It was. Was it head and shoulders? Was it the best ever? Let's see how the tournament plays out. Michigan survived their landmine. They could make it through. Wisconsin can definitely make it through.
Yep. Speaking of conferences, did you run into Brett Yormark yesterday inside the arena? He was there.
You told me you had a story on him, and
I saw him in the tunnel for a while, and he was, you know, the one thing you like about Brett Yormark, whenever you see him, he's dressed to the nines.
Oh yeah,
like it's always you know, immaculate, impeccable.
New York City,
totally. I mean, totally.
Yeah,
and you know he's shorter than I thought he was going to be.
I knew he was short.
He's a small guy. Kind of reminds me. Yeah, I think that there's a doppelganger with our very own Tony Dusing and Brett Yormark a little bit.
Oh yeah. I can see that.
You know, so I did see him and he was down there for sure. That was cool.
Ah.
Can I tell you, by the way, the best thing that I saw
Houston and Tech. I'm surprised this was his spot. Maybe not.
the best thing that I saw in round one yesterday inside the arena was there was a brief, well, I don't really know how brief, there was a decent internet outage in the building, which was unfortunate. And I was on press row, second row, and the Westwood One radio guys, national broadcasters right in front of me, they were scrambling. They were panicking because it was Gonzaga, Georgia, and it was about to tip off, and they had no internet. And their play-by-play guy, a guy by the name of Ted Emmerich, I looked it up because I was curious.
Not Doc Emmerich.
Nope. Ted Emmerich.
Okay.
Did the first at least 5 minutes of the Georgia-Gonzaga game on his phone.
We've been there.
Just talking on his phone as the engineers are scrambling and they're trying to figure out how to get the internet back connected inside. And this dude's literally holding up his cell phone and he's a pro.
Yeah.
A consummate pro. Best thing I saw yesterday inside that building.
Yeah. If you want a little insight to just you've got that. It was so cold yesterday for us, but today we're in here because of the wind. Watching us this morning would have been comical. We were on the air yesterday and while we're on the, I don't know if anybody could hear any of this. You've got the mayor doing a mayor's briefing, getting grilled about things that happened the day before that have nothing to do with the tournament. And in between that, you've got a situation. I think it was the Starkey crew. Somebody was giving them a hard time.
Yeah.
One of their members. And so they're trying to help him out.
Yeah.
And that's all literally 10 feet from us.
As we're trying to do a show, live on the air.
Yeah. Oh, hey, and what do you think about Kansas's chances?
I don't know about you. We didn't talk about it after the fact. I was ready for that segment to be
that
done.
That segment.
I'm counting down the seconds. Hey, can we please go to break? Because we got to wrap this up.
We got a couple of things happening here around.
It's a little calmer inside Homegrown. A little bit more relaxed this morning.
It is.
Than what we had yesterday.
And we appreciate them for having us in and letting us do that. And the tournament was great yesterday. And we're going to talk about the games that played out here in our final hour in as we make our way through. Matt Hamilton, Wichita Wind Surge, will join us in the next segment about 5 minutes from now. Let's go back to Kansas for people that might just be jumping in, Tommy. Just an unbelievably expected, I guess. It should have been anyway. Because it was literally what happened in every big moment of this season. Kansas got to the end of a game with a chance to win. And not only did they not finish it, it was a comedy of errors to lose it. Like, as bad as you can imagine. 6 turnovers in 3.5 minutes. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. But we have this year from Kansas.
As a Kansas fan, I'm actually less angry this morning than I was a few weeks ago when we were talking about can they even win an NCAA tournament game, because it was expected. Even though I kind of liked their draw, at the end of the day, the team didn't fit. They didn't work well together.
Well,
and throw your hands up in the air and you're like, this is what they are.
Both things can be true.
They are who we thought they were.
We were right about the draw. Yep. It was a good draw.
It was.
It was a good draw. They should have beat Arkansas last night. Arkansas had a great game plan and had them on the ropes. And then Kansas got it together and had a chance to win. And then, like we said, ensued. Yeah. And
I'm going to tell you my favorite analogy. You know, in the movie Old Yeller, when Old Yeller gets rabies and the kid takes him back behind the barn and just, you know, mercifully puts him down.
That's the only thing about Old Yeller anybody ever.
The kid in this story was Arkansas and Kansas was Old Yeller. They put Kansas out of their misery. So I'm not even angry today. I'm just thank God that's over.
Yeah. I don't think I'm angry about it either. It makes me less angry to see the incredible performance of this community here because that was the only thing that was actually angering me. I actually, at the end of that game, had a ton of sympathy for Bill Self, because I know how much he loves those guys, and I know how hard this season has been to watch those guys struggle that way, really for the last 2 years. I have so much sympathy for KJ Adams, whose story is incredible, who has dealt with a ton of crap that is very hard to deal with and now has to deal with that kind of injury. I felt bad for really good players who just never fit together. I just had a lot of sympathy for it, but I'm with you. I'm glad it will be time for them to reset things, because I want to know in the modern era truly how Kansas survives. It's not a question of whether they can get portal players. They always have gotten the best ones. Remy Martin was the top guy. Hunter Dickinson was the top guy. Rylan Griffin and AJ Storr, for what Kansas was trying to accomplish were the top guys. They'll get the top guys. I'm not worried about that.
With the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
Don't get much more insider than the general manager of the Wichita Wind Surge. Is the Surge getting ready to start the season? One of the busiest people in Wichita right now, Matt Hamilton, joining us. First full go Matt Hamilton show all the way on the docket. I know it's been busy. You guys ready? You guys ready? We're getting close.
Yeah, at this point, you know, if we weren't ready, it would be pretty alarming. No, we've got everything pretty well squared away. Now it's just buttoning up loose ends to make sure that when April 8th rolls around, everybody has, you know, their checklist of things in front of them. And we know what we need to do to put on a good show when we open up the gates. So, no, April 8th is going to be a phenomenal night. When we open up against the Midland Rockhounds, affiliate for the Oakland Athletics, or not Oakland anymore. Whoa.
Just the Athletics.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. Whoa. MLB.
That used to be Oakland, maybe soon to be Vegas, playing in Sacramento, nothing Athletics.
Yes, that exactly that. Yeah. So, no, opening night will be phenomenal. Of course, we'll shoot fireworks on opening night, and then we'll roll into the rest of the series that week. But, yeah, no, the biggest goal for us this offseason was to just jam-pack our promo schedule and try to give fans every which reason they can think of to come out to the ballpark. Whether you are or are not a baseball fan, there should be something for everybody.
The biggest story from the offseason, I would say, would definitely be the new partnership with Equity Bank Park. And Riverfront Stadium is no more Equity Bank Park. I know that's something you've been working on for a long time and finally coming to fruition.
Yeah, it's exciting. Anytime you can get a partner who's willing to walk alongside you for, you know, a decade and a half is pretty important. And it only opens up the opportunities that we have as an organization to, you know, fireworks shows cost money. Giveaways cost money. Those types of things cost money. And so to have a partner who can, you know, support us the way that Equity Bank does and will do for the next 15 years will allow us to do bigger and better fireworks shows, to do, you know, cooler and nicer giveaways. That, you know, anytime you have a partner who can, you know, give you 15 years of security, it allows you to do so much more that only helps enhance the fan experience while achieving the ultimate goal, which is keeping costs down. And so anytime that we have the financial freedom to do those types of things, it only enhances fan experience. And that's what we're primarily focused on all day, every day. And so partnerships like this are just immensely important to everything that we do. So it's very exciting. We're so thrilled to be working with Equity Bank. They've been super easy, considering we got this deal finally secured at the very tail end of January to try to get this thing activated. And they've been very patient with us, which is nice too. So no, it's going to be a lot of fun. And if you drive by the ballpark right now,
putting signage up as we speak,
as we speak, Bank Park is on the scoreboard right now. And then Equity with the logo will go up, later today once the wind kind of tallies down a little bit. But if you drive past one of our maple gates, Equity Bank Park is already up and you can see it in full display.
And that's free money for the city too, for all the people keeping score, which is always good. You mentioned boosting, you know, promotions and activities up while keeping costs down. I think that's, you know, that's two things that have definitely gotten better for this organization over the last two seasons. And I think that, you know, the plan and the vision, at least from what I can tell for you, is for that to just, I mean, it's just continues to go in the right direction for those two lanes. Cost down, fun up, right?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's the only way that minor league baseball is successful in a market, is we have to remain affordable for every single level of income. And we're even more hypersensitive to it, especially over, you know, if you take a look at the financial landscape of the United States for the last couple of years and you know, we never know. It's going to be volatile year in and year out. It doesn't matter who's in office. And so what we have to do on our side is whatever we can do to, you know, if we're able to save a little bit on the different type of vessel that we're serving nachos on, that helps us keep nacho costs down. So it's amazing the little things that we do and will do to make sure that, you know, whenever fans come out to the game, they don't feel like they can't afford it, because Affordable Family Fund's the only way that we stay viable. It's the only way that we stay relevant. And it's the one thing that I'll continue to harp on my entire career.
Jacob mentioned this at the very top. It's the Matt Hamilton show.
Yeah.
President Jay Miller retired over during the offseason. And I know you partnered with him in a lot of different areas. It was your first year with the organization. You know, he's a guy that came back to Wichita when he didn't have to.
Sure.
And he did. And, you know, obviously will be missed. But what were some of the things that, you know, you took away from working with him last season and then being able to make it your own?
Sure. Well, I mean, anytime you work with one individual who's done something for 40 plus years, there's certainly things that you can take away. But, you know, one thing I will always say is that I'm super thankful for all the folks that I've worked with throughout the course of my career. You know, if you look at the way the Amarillo Sod Poodles operate, there's probably going to be some similarities in the way that we do things here. If you look at the way the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders operate, there's some similarities to things that we do here, and so on and so forth with the Wind Surge. And so, no, I mean, Jay obviously came back and did a phenomenal job of standing the organization back up in a positive light. And so now going forward, you know, we're in a good place to roll off of that and continue to push the envelope with some of the things that we're doing this year, as far from a marketing and advertising standpoint, promotion standpoint. And, you know, if you've ever been to a minor league stadium and you've had the opportunity to meet just random celebrities, that's experiences that we're going to deliver this year. We have a couple of nights where we're going to bring out some characters, or I should say actors and actresses from TV shows and movies, to enhance experience and provide fans an opportunity to meet somebody in another world they never probably would have had the opportunity to meet. We're going to continue to do, we're bringing in a guy named Josh David, who's a country artist, Canadian guy who's trying to, you know, get his foot in the door in the American scene. And he's going to come do a concourse concert after a game out in the Pump House area. And so we're going to continue to do those little things. But, you know, the one thing that we wanted to establish realistically was just consistency from a fan expectation standpoint on what they can come to expect when they come to the ballpark. On Friday nights, we know there's fireworks. On Saturdays, what was the expectation? It was sometimes there's a giveaway, sometimes there's a theme, things like that. So every single Saturday, we'll have a giveaway for the first 2,000 fans who come through our gates. And anytime you come to the ballpark on a Saturday, that should be the expectation to drive the desire to get there. We brought bobbleheads back. I don't know if y'all seen the posts about our bobbleheads this year. And so we really wanted to bring quality back to the experience that fans should not only come to expect this year, but years going forward as well.
Matt and I have known each other for a long time. Matt Hamilton, general manager of the Wichita Wind Surge. One thing that I've followed that you've done in your other stops that has been lacking at now Equity Bank Park are the non-baseball events that take advantage of a great facility. A part of the sell to this community with a downtown ballpark was all the other stuff that's not baseball. I know you've been working hard on some of those things, and I think Wichitans or the surrounding area can expect some opportunities to go down there and have fun outside of baseball soon.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't name the artists yet. There's some parameters around the contracts that we have, but we do have two concerts booked in the month of August. And so we're looking forward to being able to communicate who those artists are here soon. Once we can put tickets on sale, I can give you the dates at the very least right now, Saturday, August 16th, and then Friday, August 22nd. So back-to-back weekends of music down at the ballpark will be a fun time to still activate the ballpark in a way that, you know, we sort of cracked the bottle on last year with Logan Mize in October. We're looking, and you know, we've got a big announcement coming the week after opening week of a community partnership and an event that'll come in August that we're really excited for. So August is going to be jam packed. We're working on some potential stuff for July. We've already got stuff kind of scheduled in October that we're excited to continue to hopefully dot some I's and cross some T's on, so we can make those announcements. And then one thing, and then we're working on some stuff potentially around the holiday season to try and keep fans entertained and activated down at Equity Bank Park. I mean, that's you nailed it. That's one of the things that we have to do as an organization, not just because it's good stewardship for the community, but because we need to provide entertainment and provide opportunities for fans who maybe would never have come to our ballpark for any other reason than that to get them through the gates. Because I'm a firm believer that one time is all it takes for somebody to come to Equity Bank Park. That's all it takes is one time, and we have an opportunity to bring them back for something else. And so if we can get them there, then we know that we can keep them.
Let's talk a little bit before we let you go about the product on the field. Ramon Berruga got promoted to the major league squad, so he's no longer the manager for the Wind Surge. So a new coaching staff there for your team. And then, of course, the Twins are, I think, by all accounts, the favorites to win the AL Central this year. So talking about, you know, potentially pretty solid baseball this year.
Yeah, and actually I just got back from spring training this last weekend down in Fort Myers and got the chance to see Ramon and give him about the biggest hug I possibly could. One of my favorite people in the game. So excited for him. But I also had a chance to meet our new manager, Brian Dinkelman, in person. And I don't think you're going to see any fall off in the type of baseball you're going to see. It's almost like Ramon and Brian are the same individual, just in two different bodies. And so they think a lot alike. They communicate the same. Should be a lot of fun. You know, he was 2023 Minor League Baseball Manager of the Year whenever Cedar Rapids won the championship. And a lot of those guys are now on this team. And so it should be a lot of fun. But obviously everybody's talking about Walker Jenkins, who's the number three overall baseball prospect in all of baseball. See him while we're down there. The kid is a titan. Like, you know, he's got a 19-year-old's face, but he's built like a 25-year-old middle linebacker. I mean, he is enormous. But that's not the only guy to be excited about. There's a guy named a couple prospects that are coming up from Ciara. We'll return a couple of guys. We should see the likes of Ben Ross and Tanner Schobel and
has Jenkins' path been determined yet? Is that
no? I mean, he was here at the end of last year, so. For the last homestand. So the speculation is that he'll get here. He's still, kind of up in the air, but we should have final roster here coming soon.
Quick, yeah.
Yeah. But we were pretty well, given some inside info that it looks like he should land here.
That would be good.
The only thing I could see that would determine that if, you know, heaven forbid, knock on wood, anything were to happen with health. But, we're ribbing about Kalen Culpepper, the Kansas State shortstop.
Who
was the Twins' first-round pick last year, and we hope to see him this year at some point or another. So, yeah, I mean, on the field, it should be a lot of the guys that were here last year. But what folks need to understand is that the jump from high A to double A is difficult. And we had a very young team last year, but a young team that won a championship at the high A level and certainly has the ability to win at the double A level. And we'll get a lot of those guys back. And so it should be a lot of fun baseball on the field.
And if he can, be held down, Jack Caglione could make an opportunity. He's not scheduled to come to Wichita until late for Royals fans, but we'll see. There's a chance.
Small chance.
Unless he just continues to tear the cover off of baseball, in which he'll probably be in Kansas City. But maybe not. We'll see. All right, Matt, opening week is April 8th. So you guys will have a couple of games and then here the fun begins April 8th. What is on tap for the opening week and are there still tickets for people to get?
Yeah, of course. The beautiful thing is that, our stadium is so big and so there's usually a lot of opportunities for fans to still get tickets. Opening night will be fireworks April 8th. We're going to have a magnet scheduled that first night. Then we'll have our first Wet Nose Wednesday, which is our new branded Wednesday night where you can bring your to the ballpark. Every evening Wednesday. Of course, the Wednesday day games are education days. So, we probably don't want, 10,000 kids and 10,000 dogs running around. But we're going to keep it on the evening. So 7 Wet Nose Wednesday dates this year. Of course, Thirsty Thursday returns in full force. And then Friday night fireworks again on the 11th. On the 12th, we're going to do a mittens giveaway sponsored by Sonic for those random cold snaps that we get in April here in Wichita, which I'm knocking on wood for those who can see me to hope that we don't have one and those mittens are just what makes people's hands sweat. And then Sunday is our family fun day. And of course, you can come out and play catch on the field pregame, run the bases after the game for all the kids 12 and under. And that'll be kind of the first push that we have as we get ready for what will be an incredible summer.
Can't wait for it. It's almost baseball season. We're very, very close. Matt Hamilton, Wichita Wind Surge general manager. It's going to be a fun year. We can't wait to see it. I was out here with the people. We were having fun. I was not inside much. I saw the very end of the Gonzaga-Georgia game. I saw warmups for Drake Mizzou, and I think that's all I saw.
Yeah.
So you were inside, though, for more of it yesterday. So what were some of the takeaways from those games that you saw outside of Drake and maybe a player that could be playing for another team in the future? Who knows? But, you know, which we touched on a little bit. But what were some of the other things you saw?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the major takeaways, and I was kind of in and out. I didn't watch all the games, and I didn't stay out here late enough to watch any of the Texas Tech games. I watched that one when I got home. But the first game, I mean, Houston flexed for sure. They showed why they're one of the one seeds in this tournament and one of the favorites to win the tournament. LJ Cryer is outstanding.
Yeah.
You know, Milos Uzan is outstanding. They've got a really, really good squad of veterans that can score, that can defend. But I think the biggest thing about this Houston team and the reason why even before the tournament started, I picked them to go all the way is their discipline. And their discipline starts with Kelvin Sampson. And because of that, and because of just the way that he coaches these guys up, and you watch him on the sideline, like they were up like almost 40 points at one time, and he never stopped coaching. Like that's Kelvin Sampson. And I've got a ton of respect for him. I'd like to see him get a ring at this point in his career. I think he's got the team to do it.
Yep.
I was really, and I know it was a 1-16, but I was really impressed with Houston yesterday.
But we've been impressed with Houston all year.
Totally.
I do think when you get a team that just comes to the tournament, no, because Alabama State had Auburn scared, sweating a little bit deep into the first half there.
Texas A&M struggled a little bit.
Yeah.
I know they're not a one seed, but, you know, still.
But to just come out and just handle your stuff.
Yeah.
There's something to be said about that. And if there's any team you would expect to do that, it's a Kelvin Sampson team. So, you know, you had that part of it, and I'm with you on that. Gonzaga, I think, is the big story of our day.
Totally.
As much as, you know, Drake is a great story. As much as Bennett Sturts is a player that we could envision doing other things, and that is based on absolutely nothing, by the way, other than he's from around here, right? And there are two teams that could use his services. That's the only reason we say that. Nothing of substance for anything that I've ever heard of, blah, 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 blah. Gonzaga was the story of yesterday, I think, for this regional, because they just flat dominated. And you kept kind of seeing everybody say the same thing, like, man, they're underseeded. Like, the metrics love them. I don't know. There was a time, though, we say they're underseeded, Tommy, when you don't have a strength of schedule in your conference and you struggle, it's where a team like Gonzaga is going to end up. You remember in Omaha when Wichita State beat Kansas. They were a 7 seed, not because they were a 7 seed in the metrics.
Yeah.
They were a 7 seed because they lost games they shouldn't have lost that year and played in the Valley.
Yeah, they were underseeded from a talent perspective.
I don't think they were from a
perspective.
Yes. So they were a 7 seed, and they should have been a 7 seed based on what they did over the course of the year, but they weren't a 7 seed.
Right. Same thing with Gonzaga. Like,
yes.
From a talent perspective, you look at their roster, and it's a lot of guys that we're familiar with. It's Ryan Nimhard, and it's Graham Ike, and it's, you know, some of these other guys that have been around this program, and Mark Few is a veteran coach. And you just look at the talent and the lineup on paper, and you're like, man, how in the world are they an 8 seed? And then you watch them blow out Georgia, and you're like, how are they an 8 seed? But then you go back and look at their overall body of work in the conference they play in, and it's like, okay, I kind of get it from a body of work resume perspective. Talent-wise, they're better than an 8 seed for sure. And as great as Houston is, Houston's going to get challenged at times in this game tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
For sure, against Gonzaga. It's really going to mean, I think, that the discipline that I mentioned a minute ago is going to have to be on full force from Kelvin Sampson and his staff with those players, the veteran leadership of that team, to not let Gonzaga's talent overwhelm you. And I think that if any team is most equipped to be able to handle that, it is Houston to be able to do that.
Yeah, it is going to be hard, as I'm down with the family, not to pop in and check out that game a little bit. But look, Gonzaga this year, okay, they had 8 losses. West Virginia, no big deal. Kentucky, UConn, no big deal. UCLA, no big deal. 2 to St. Mary's, no big deal, right?
Yeah, because St. Mary's is really good.
They had back-to-back losses in January to Oregon State and Santa Clara.
That'll do it.
And if they don't have those two, I think we're looking at more like a 5 seed.
Yeah.
You know, 4 seed. So when you think about that, though, Houston would have had to play them in the next round, in the Sweet 16. So I don't, like, there's not really, like, a sympathy component to me for it, because Houston's expectation isn't just to make the Sweet 16. You were going to have to play a team like Gonzaga in the next round, in the round of Sweet 16 anyway.
Right.
So now you have to play them a round earlier. Who cares, right? You're going to have to beat those. You got to beat those kinds of teams no matter what you do.
Well, I think, yeah, who cares? But also, I think the fact that we talked about the expectations for Houston, and even if it's not national championship / Final Four, it's absolutely second weekend,
well, I mean, sure,
without a doubt. And so, like, if this team with these players and this coach go home in the second round and don't make it to the second weekend because they fell to Gonzaga on a Saturday, well, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's as simple to say just who cares in that regard.
That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm trying to say. I guess what I'm saying is, yes, it will be everyone will be disappointed. I'd be disappointed. I pick them to win a national championship. It's not so much that as, like, I don't think it, like, erases their great season, just not the finish that they had hoped for. But at the end of the day, like, don't get mad that you have to play Gonzaga now. You were going to have to beat teams like Gonzaga anyway. So just beat them, right? If you're the best team, you just beat them.
Yeah.
Is it the luckiest draw? No. Would you rather see UConn as an 8 in the second round?
You know, I don't know. I thought about that last night because, you know, UConn, we're talking back-to-back national champions. They've lost a lot of their team, obviously, and they've had, you know, a stretch of games this year where they didn't perform up to expectations either. That's a toss-up for me because, I mean, right, after watching Gonzaga yesterday, like, man, they were making everything. It was interesting because I was in the arena for a lot of the first half of that Gonzaga-Georgia matchup before it got to the point to where, like, Gonzaga was maintaining about a 20-25-point lead. My God, I'm going to go do some other things. But it wasn't just that Gonzaga was hitting everything that they looked at. It was the fact that they made Georgia look really bad. Like, Georgia could not hit the broadside of a barn. And it wasn't just that they were missing shots. They were rushing shots. Gonzaga was making them uncomfortable. They couldn't run any offense. At one point, I look up to the scoreboard, and it's like 27-3. Gonzaga's leading,
yes,
in the first half. Like, what are we doing here, Georgia?
When I looked up,
what are we doing here?
Like, this is gross. So, but again, like, are you going to go crazy because you're playing Gonzaga and not Creighton the way that Creighton played yesterday?
Are you surprised by that? Because I know you have Louisville.
Yeah, for sure. Yes, because Louisville was playing at home. I'm not surprised Creighton's good in the tournament. Creighton's always flipping good in the tournament.
You know, Greg McDermott has won at least one NCAA tournament game every year in the last 5 years. Creighton wins every year.
They're steady Eddie, yeah. Yes. And then we mentioned UConn. And then the other one is today, Mississippi State and Baylor. Mississippi State's really good. We both think Mississippi State's going to win. I don't know what you want. Like, so it sucks, but Houston will be fine. Houston still needs to win.
So, I mean, do you think if we're making picks for at least that game tomorrow, Houston Gonzaga, do you have Houston moving on?
Yes.
Okay.
Am I picking Houston to beat Gonzaga?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But after what we saw Gonzaga do yesterday.
You remember what we saw yesterday from Houston?
Against the 16 seed.
I know.
I mean, let's keep it in perspective here.
But
a little bit.
Do you think Houston would have done much worse against Georgia? You know what I mean? Like, than Gonzaga did? Yes, I'm still taking Houston. I think Houston's the best team in the country.
Are there early lines out?
Yes, it was five. I think it was five. Houston by five.
Man, you know what? Honestly, and I've got Houston moving on too. I mean, they're my national champion. They're your national champion. I don't think I'm going to touch it, but if I had to, I might take the points. I think it might be a one possession game.
Yeah, I could see that. I just this is going to be good for Houston is that everybody saw that and is like, uh-oh, here comes Gonzaga. Totally. But Houston was fantastic yesterday, and Houston has been, in my opinion, the most consistent team this year with the most – like the largest collection of impressive wins of any team in the country.
Yeah.
They lost early, and they have so many big wins. And you think back to the first Kansas game, the fact that they were able to come back in that game, like all of these different things with Houston, it's why so many people around here which I didn't know this was going to happen, but it has, have been picking Houston
yeah.
to be their champion is because it's,
you've been following them all season well, and they just don't stumble.
They feel, yeah, they lost to Auburn by 5. They lost to Alabama by 5 in overtime. This was early in the year. This was in their first 5 games. They lost to San Diego State in overtime. That was in San Diego State was a tournament team.
Yeah.
And I was on the road.
They lost to Tech at home. That was their only home stumble.
And that was in overtime by 1 point.
Yeah.
All their losses essentially have been in overtime or to teams that are in the top 5 essentially in the country. They have one that's not like that.
Yeah.
Everything else has been a win. They have played so many games that are close, so they're so experienced at it, right? And they've won some of those and they've lost some of those.
And they are the antithesis of Kansas.
Yes.
From a clutch perspective. So, like, you go back to what I said a minute ago, where I might take the points if I had to choose something. I might take the points.
But take Houston to win
because it could easily come down to a one-possession game with the way that Gonzaga played yesterday. But Houston has that DNA, that clutch mentality from Samson to be able to get the win.
Two Hall of Fame coaches, too.
Totally.
I mean,
and people are talking nationally, and I get it. Totally understand why. They're so focused on Calipari and Patino in the second round.
Yeah, and we got Samson.
And we got Samson and Few. Like, that's a hell of a matchup in the second
round. Who I think are both better coaches than Calipari and Patino, by the way. Just my opinion. I think Calipari's one of the best recruiters of all time. But when we're talking about coaching, I'll take Samson and Few. Now, Patino's up there with him. But Samson, it does not get better than Samson and Few. As far as just coaching, it does not get better than those two guys.
This might be an unpopular opinion around this area. I really like John Calipari. I didn't used to.
I do, too.
He used to annoy the crap out of me.
I'm a big
And now
Cal.
I've embraced it, and I love it. Like, watching him
on the sideline
last night.
Yes, I'm a Cal fan.
It's constantly the arms are outstretched wide with his jaw dropped open.
Yes, I'm a Cal
fan. I love it.
Because he's been so pro-player over the years. That's what's made me a Cal fan. I've always said he's, you know, this great. He coached his butt off last night.
He did.
He coached his butt off last night against Kansas. But I'm a Cal fan, too. I thought you were going to say you think Kelvin Sampson's a better coach than Bill Self or something.
Oh,
like,
no.
You better not say
but
that.
But I don't know if they're, other than Patino, we talked about this before, I don't know if there's a better redemption story in college basketball than
Sampson. And I don't know that.
Because he was like the pariah of college basketball for a number of years after his time in Indiana and OU and all of that. I mean, he was an assistant coach in the NBA for a couple of years because he couldn't get a job in college basketball. Yeah, I think he had the sanctions from the NCAA and all of that, and he has absolutely rehabilitated his image.
Yes, he has, and I do think based on Isaac Brown used to tell like, hey, that's the best coach. Like that, as far as like coaching goes, that's the best coach.
Yep.
And I don't disagree with that based on what we've seen at Houston.
I wasn't in the arena in 2018 when they were here last and they played Michigan in that game.
Beater Michigan.
So this was the first time I've ever seen Kelvin Sampson in person, watching him coach.
Oh, really?
And it was great. I mean, just like the steadiness of him and just the demeanor really doesn't change.
For me, it's how prepared his teams always are.
Absolutely.
Like, he has to be the best practice coach,
absolutely.
Right? Because his teams just are always – next, and Mark Few's that way too. It's awesome. So then in the other game, we get two up-and-coming coaches. Drake Tech is the game I hoped for, honestly.
Yeah.
Great stories. I'm going to be rooting for Tech because they have grown on me because, you know, so many people close to where I grew up are big fans of theirs. I think that community has become one of the great basketball communities in the country. That is going to be an awesome, awesome game. I think there could be fireworks. I think the environment's going to be incredible. I think there won't be, and I'll look after we get through it today, and I'll go back and look at this. I don't think that I would trade any two sets of games, like any round of 32, two games for what we'll get tomorrow here.
I don't think, and I
got to look at them and make sure that that's the case. But, man, I don't think so.
And honestly, I think, you know, that's probably ended up the best that it possibly could have with the 8 teams that were here. I mean, maybe you could make an argument about Mizzou over Drake here.
That was always a wash to me.
But think about, like, geography-wise, and we're basically smack dab in the middle between Des Moines and Lubbock.
Yeah.
Right? And so you've got just these dueling fan bases coming in. Drake, they're used to Wichita because they played the Shockers for so long. There are these Wichita connections with Texas Tech, with Luke Barnwell, Matt Brower, like all of that. I can't wait. I mean, it worked out. And I know there were Wichita connections with Mizzou. You know, sucks for Caleb Grill that he didn't get a win with Mizzou last night. And he didn't, I don't think by his standards, he would say he had a great game. I don't think he was happy with his overall game last night for Mizzou. He didn't shoot the ball particularly well, but it was okay. And he made some clutch shots when he needed to. But man, I'm so excited for this matchup for both of them. Honestly, I agree with you. I don't think we could have drawn it up any better.
I'll take Drake over Mizzou. I don't know. You know, I don't know if there'll be more fans. Probably not. But it's that story is one of the stories of college basketball this year. There is no doubt about it. The Division II call up, basically, like that is as good a college basketball story as there is.
And not just the coach, the players too. Like the players that followed him.
That's
like,
more.
It's
that's
basically
even,
a D2 squad.
That's even more impressive.
Yeah.
Right. And it gives, like, I don't remember, maybe I was talking to you, I don't remember who I was talking to yesterday. TJ Cleland's the Division II guy. Like when you're you go to a Division II school and you get fired up for the athletics at your Division II, like, you always wonder. When you're watching, like, a really good team, you're like, man, how would they fare if they played? Because, they're just as big, right? They're big. Size wouldn't be a thing. You got 7-footers all over Division II basketball. So you're like, that wouldn't be it. What is it? What would it be? And when you talk about teams that have been together and they're highly skilled like that, that have been that successful, that story does not get better than that. Does not get better than that. It's been a blast, everybody. We're going to talk about it Monday. Thanks again to Homegrown for letting us be in here today. For Tommy, I'm Jacob. Thanks, Max, back in the studio. Thanks, Tony, for helping us set it up. Thanks to our guests. We'll see you Monday.